Welcome to the SEO Insider with your host, Seth Price, founder of Blue Shark, taking you inside the world of legal marketing and all things digital.
Welcome, everybody. We're thrilled to have Ken Singleton here. He is a web designer, an SEO expert, and an award-winning author. Since 2005, Phil has owned and operated a digital agency in Kansas City. In 2016, Phil and his partner John of Duct Tape Marketing co-wrote SEO for Growth, the ultimate guide for marketers and web designers and entrepreneurs. SEO for Growth is an Amazon bestseller and has been listed as a top marketing book by Mashable, Oracle, and the Huffington Post, and was named by Forbes as the number one SEO book on the list of essential SEO books for every startup to read. Wow. Aside from running a successful multi seven-digit agency, Phil also owns or co-owns two media franchises, two home service businesses, and a niche marketing agency called Podcast Brokers that helps business owners and executives get powerful backlinks for SEO while building their authority and personal brands. Welcome, Phil.
Hey, Seth. Thanks for having me. This is awesome.
This is quite a bio. You know, we have a lot to talk about, and it was great to be on your podcast. We're going to be able to, get to some more questions. But the thing I wanted to start off with, because we are on a podcast, and I do two video podcasts where we take the video and strip the audio. Talk to me about the service you have where you help people get visibility, which I love both from the brand building, but also from the SEO side. Tell me about how you work with entrepreneurs to get them visibility through podcasts.
Yeah. So a few years ago, going kind of step far back, John Jansen of Duct Tape Marketing, I've been in his mastermind marketing group, whatever you want to call it. He's got a network of about 150 certified duct tape marketers. I'm one of them. I've been in there for probably 6 or 7 years. But John wrote this book, I think in 2005, called Duct Tape Marketing, a Wall Street Journal bestseller, kind of got him to be a marketing influencer before we were calling him marketing influencers. But long story short is he always kind of attributed his whole critical mass and the trajectory of his whole career to podcasting, because he was one of the original business podcasts. Of course, social media came in after that and podcasts kind of fell back. But then all of a sudden, last few years, podcasting has come back and kind of really never gonna, no turning back now. So I had always kind of wanted to get into it, but I just always felt like writing a book. Before I wrote a book, I was like, gosh, it seems like this is a great career goal, but it seems too far out there, too much work to do. But it's like anything else. I mean, podcasting takes some work and whatnot, but once you get into it, it's not as bad as you think. It's almost kind of like writing a book. So long story short, I figured, you know what, before I start my own podcast, because it took me several years to even kind of get it back onto the plate. I was like, gosh, wouldn't it be easier maybe to test the waters and maybe get on other people's podcasts. And I started looking around, lo and behold, I found, oh, well, there are companies out there, a few of them that were getting people booked on third-party podcasts. So I started doing it, but I did look around. I was really upset with the way, it's funny, in my life, there's been a few times where I've been so upset by a business dealing that I've started a company to kind of, that was the motivation to do it. And that was one of the reasons I was so turned off by one of these companies.
You went to one of the other companies and said, hey, I'll be your client. And you were just so turned off by how
it was such a bad experience. And this the way the whole process went. And I was like, I really want to do this. I want to buy it from you.
It's funny. I took one of those pitches, not yours, but another third party company. And I remember thinking to myself, because a good friend of mine went through that process, and two funny stories about it. One, I have a very clear vision of what I want for myself, my brand, the people I want to hit. I'm not sitting here with like a generic national product that everybody in the world needs to know, and the more eyeballs, the better. And so to me, I didn't want something where they were making money just by getting me anywhere. It's good for SEO. You get a link, but look, links are links, and you can get them much easier than spending an hour of your time talking to somebody. Sure. But I get it. And the idea that a thoughtful one that sort of matched up what was intent. Ironically, and this is a person I've had on one of my two podcasts several times, I just got the pitch from that company to get this person onto our podcast. I got to send back saying, hey, they've been on our family of shows twice. We love them. But it demonstrates that, you know, this is what you have to get over, right? It's the Groucho Marx concept. Why would you ever want to be a member of a club that have you as a member? So you are doing digital PR, but if it's done well, it's freaking awesome. If it's the lowest, if you're just trying to fill the beast and get yourself anywhere, then you're just talking aimlessly into the ethos.
That was my experience. I found somebody to get me on. I've been booked on 100 shows. I was like, holy cow. I started getting hundreds of thousands of dollars in new business to the fact where I had to stop doing it because we had other things taken off. So that was great. I didn't do it for that. I was doing it more for like, okay, yeah, I want to test this thing out. Then I started getting the group together to be like, hey, I want to do this service for my own customers. Because a big part of what we talked about, Seth, before, part of our process is we do the websites, you know, we do the keyword research, we build a content calendar, the content calendars turn into blog series turn into books, and we use the books to get people booked on the podcast. Well, podcasts are, people look at podcasts for a lot of different reasons. People, when they first come to us, everybody's always thinking about, I want to get on the big podcast, like, and that's it. They're just thinking about the one dimensional thing and how big is the audience type of thing. But the big podcasts aren't the Joe Rogan, you know, podcast.
And they don't want to hear from us.
Totally not. And it's not really about that. It's about finding your niche audience, finding a small group. It's almost like a virtual, you know, speaking tour, town hall speaking tour, where you can get in front of a bunch of people that are somewhat.
And when you get in front of those great ones, it works. It's amazing.
Just direct, it works. I mean, but that's still not really why I wanted to do it. What I love about pod, if you do it right, you target the right companies and they're in your niche and they're in business. You get, and this is the, how we target, other people don't do it, is we're trying to get it on shows that are advanced marketers. They've got email lists. They've done over 50 podcasts. They're setting up episode pages where they're doing a whole personal branding campaign on their website that includes, you know, a graphic and a backlink or several backlinks back to the website. So in that case, it's going out there and you're just having other people say, if you do it right, like how I sent you my bio, you read what I sent to you on purpose, because hopefully you'll put that up on your website and Google's going to hear you saying Phil Singleton is an expert. And they heard over 100 times these advanced marketing people that are in my niche saying, Phil's an expert, Phil's an expert. My content then become, I see this working already for us and our clients. It does work when they can sense the signal that you're an expert, the content that you're associated with goes up all the way around. So that's the way that we're doing. It's a little bit different. Most of the podcast booking, they're just trying to get you booked on podcasts. They don't care if the show's being hosted on Libsyn. We don't want shows hosted on Libsyn or other places. We want them hosted on their website. So that center of gravity goes on a place where—
Which is— obviously not every, you know, it's pick your poison. And like for myself, you know, we have two. So one is on our company website, which is decent. It's, you know, Cobbler Shoes, our SEO's site is not, you know, mega influential because we don't make our money through that. But, you know, our other, the Law Firm Growth one, it really, yeah, there's not that much value to those links, ironically. So you really, you know, if you're doing it for SEO, it's a very different agenda than for something else. And it works for both. Both can be right.
Right. It's like anything like that we do, you're trying to get, if you do anything these days, and I think one of the things that we're pretty strong at, or maybe is my personal gift, is trying to get 10 wins instead of one. So don't just get booked on a podcast. You know, when we get booked on a podcast, we want the backlink, we want the episode page, we want to make sure the domain ranking is 20 or above. We also want to make sure that people are going to, you know, share them on their social media, share them on their email list. But we also have got a program. We go back and say, hey, let's send an email back to the host and ask them,
right, exactly.
Was I a good guest on your show? Well, if I am, would you mind going, give me a LinkedIn review or a Google review? So, you know, like a third of my Google reviews are people, hosts on popular shows saying, Phil was a great guest on this thing. Well, all of a sudden now your map rankings go up. So for that $167 pitch on a show, you just got 10 wins that for a bang for a buck standpoint, it's just unbeatable. So we did it internally. I did it for my own clients, basically. I built up a team and then we were able to scale it. Now we've got, I don't know, over 100 clients. And a lot of them are our own clients. We build on them. I think we've got 12 full-time bookers, but I just do it because it works.
12 full-time bookers.
Yeah. We just do it because it works. I mean, it's just a massive bang for the buck. If you line it all up and have a strategy, what ends up happening with anything, like you tell people blogging works, they go do a bunch of blogs. The blogs don't work because there's no strategy behind it. You can say podcasting works. I do think podcasting is probably one of the most powerful things in SEO. But it's not if you just go do podcast. You have to kind of have a whole strategy. And then if you can do the hour, half hour for that time, I think you can't really get as much bang for the buck if you line up all the ducks. If you don't, you're going to be wasting your time just like trying to do volume-based link building, volume-based blogging, whatever it is. So that's how we started Podcast Bookers, and it's growing really fast. I think it's starting to kind of get a little more popularity in even the SEO community, but it's the SEO, a lot of the SEO stuff that you get pitched on is still backlink guest blogging driven, right?
Right.
But if you think about what you would pay for a, you know, $200-$300 for a backlink and you just get the link and maybe a keyword versus getting a whole personal branding page that has very shiny. And also, the other thing I like about it, one thing I'll leave with this, Seth, is that in our case, not only is it very powerful, but by nature of it, our client is getting involved with their own marketing and they're doing some of the work for us. That's really another reason I like it. If they're getting on a regimen where they're getting on a good podcast that's got, you know, some traction on it and does the episode page and they're doing it twice a month or once a week, they're out there doing work that's going to work for them and they're doing some of the work for us. So that's another reason I think agencies should do it more. It's like, it's not a big cost.
No, it's just sold. I love it. So look, I know this is the last thing on your bio, but we got a lot more to talk about here.
If you're going to work with somebody and have a marketing partner, it really has to be relationship-based, right? Because they're only human. In fact, one of the ways that we pitch our relationship to new prospective clients and clients is almost like you want to probably look at us at some point like a legal, like a lawyer, like the relationship you have with your CPA or the relationship you have with your lawyer who you've had for years, right? You're looking to them for advice. They're part of your team. It's not this vendor-based relationship where you're writing check and they're doing something in the back room. So we actually kind of use that analogy or metaphor, whatever you call it, to kind of explain, this is kind of the relationship we need to have. It needs to be a partnership and we need to be in a communication and we need to kind of value each other that way. Because one, we're only human, right? You see this all the time, right? When somebody, this is our agency more than, you know, I'm just speaking from, I guess, my own experience, which is we may have clients that pay us on the high end that maybe don't treat us more like a vendor, not as motivated to work for them. Maybe something that we've had for years, we haven't raised the price up, that really treat us as part of the team, super motivated, going the extra mile, really happy to do that. I think that's something that all businesses should learn to someone. You're going to get more because people, you're just working with humans, right? What do you think? Do you agree with that? Or
no, absolutely, Phil. I feel like, you know, you've talked to the two issues that I've seen, both good and bad. So the first is, yes, working as a partner, it is human. It's not a SaaS-based. There are people that have bought. One of my friend's companies got bought by a SaaS-based company. Yeah, if you don't really care if it's all machine learning and AI, then yeah, you could probably treat people like crap and it'll work anyway. Maybe. I don't really buy into that for SEO, but put that aside. You know, so to me, what I see is, yes, it is about relationships and it's the people doing the work. It cuts both ways. Let me take you as an agency owner though, Phil, because you talked about something, legacy contracts. I can speak to the legal space. I'm curious about your world. Once people set a number for SEO, it is rare that it goes up. You may add PPC to it. You might do paid search. You might add something to it. But the action, and when I started, there was a moment when I received clients from some of my favorite people in the space. I'm like, there's no way. These people are excellent. There's no way somebody should leave. And then I looked, and you mentioned this, that people can eke out a lot from a legacy contract at a number that's way too low. What you charged when you first started for a monthly retainer is much different for the same type of project that you do now. And so now you have an issue where you can hold on to people. Now you'd be able to squeeze more because people love them. That's not necessarily good for the business and the ROI. And you know, if you're looking at EBITDA or something like that, your margins aren't going to be great because it's very little money and the people are spending a ton of time. And on the flip side of that, you know, so how do you make sure that this is the opposite question, which is for something where there's X amount being spent, not 3X, it's only X. How do you make sure that your beloved client doesn't take so much in the form of resources that it's actually unprofitable? It's a tough balance. I wonder how you approach that.
Well, it's really, we've gotten really good about this year. In fact, we've gotten some to some point where I had to go back and say, look, you're not paying market rates. And this is what we charge new people when they come in. We have to get you closer to where you were because it's not like it was 5 or 6 or 7 years ago. And we just lost one, I think, this week that I had. It's an outdoor service, home services, and really exceptional results. Great leads up every single day to this time. But what happens when you charge, this is what I've seen, I'm the struggle that we've had. You get somebody and they get used to almost excellence, or they get used to like rankings and leads like it's theirs now, and they're paying for something that they feel like they're entitled to, or they just have without you. And they're going to learn pretty soon that it doesn't. That's the one thing I've noticed about SEO in the last few years is it used to stick longer. I'm seeing with clients that the few clients that we do lose, we do some of our attrition over the years, they fall faster than they did 5 or 10 years ago because they stopped doing this.
Right. And that's true. We also see, we've seen some of that, but I also had the frustration as an agency owner. We sometimes see the opposite where you do so much work and somebody cuts it off and that work doesn't stop. There are links that are being indexed and things that happen in the age of domain so that there are times, ironically, that after you stop, you're paying dividends for what has been done. And so it does cut both ways.
Totally.
You know, you asked me this question. I'd love to hear your thoughts. As far as you're now an end, you're not just an SEO, but you've now invested in a number of businesses where you're sort of, and again, I literally the other day, my backyard, my grass is not great. My kids rip it up. I have a couple boys that destroy it along with a daughter. And my across the back fence neighbor, her father-in-law gardens all the time for them. Their lawn is spectacular. And she looks over the fence and says to me, "Wow, your grass is so beautiful." And I'm like, "You, lady, you realize you are the living embodiment of the saying, the grass is always greener." So I went from one to the other. You've gone from SEO into entrepreneur and business owner. Tell me about what you have learned, because you're now seeing it from the other side as well. What have you learned as you've looked at as a business owner now receiving SEO services from an agency? I know it's all within an entity, but it's still, you know, you probably, any lessons you've learned seeing what it's like as you put your pro forma for those two franchises?
Sure. Well, the franchise business is a little different because that actually came in with a team, with a client base. We're able to restructure some things where I bought it was not profitable. And last year it was very profitable. But I think what it taps into more, what it's, is I think more interesting as an agency owner standpoint is, I think that companies like yours and mine on the digital side, and again, this is me as a 50-year-old looking back, doing this for 20 years, 15 of it exclusively, really. I think that if you're good at marketing or really good at marketing, you can never charge what you're worth down the road. And there's several companies that we've taken from 400,000 to 4 million, 4 million in some cases to 40 million, not able to charge the fees along their growth path, right? They just think that they're into, I haven't been able to. I haven't been able to charge a $4,000 a month kind of $40,000 or $50,000, even though they theoretically could support that or more. So what's been frustrating to me as an agency owner, but I think really this is a message to all marketers, is we're never, ever going to be able to charge, I think, what we're worth. This is me looking back. If you're able to deliver a strong ROI for your clients. So that got me thinking, you know, I'd much rather take a risk and take part of a business or invest in a business or buy a business where I can own 30 or 40 or 50% of it. And then maybe instead of a $4,000 a month, that's how I can get my $40,000 or $50,000 a month upside that I want. And a really risky thing, but I'm in a nice space now, kind of like you are, where you've got a business, it's supporting itself, it's coming in, you've got a system in place. I can take some risks like this, still have a nice, you know, living here over on the agency side and some of these other businesses that I have, but take some risk in some of these other companies. So that's what the motivation was to do that. And a little risky coming in. So what I found is here in Kansas City, and particularly St. Louis, we've got some really special lead generation systems that nobody else. We do have an unfair advantage in these markets. And in that case, the problem that I've noticed on the other side is, okay, you come in with a lead machine, like I did with this one, a deck business that we have, and we're literally bringing in probably day one, you know, a $5 million a year lead flow when you've got a startup team. Tons of pressure to come in and have to deal with leads coming in, not organized, not having a system in place. And you kind of live by the sword, die by the sword. So when people are coming in, they want to buy from you because you're a business and you're ranking well, you're getting leads, and you don't get back to them, you run the risk of having a death spiral on reputation because they go on Google and say, "I called these guys and they haven't responded to me in 2 weeks," type of a thing. So there's all sorts of risks like that. Then it comes into the people side, which is really, you know, I've had the advantage of kind of hiring team, getting really good people over the years. And like you said, you know how it is for every probably really good, for me anyway, for every good person that we hire to our team, it maybe takes one or two other hires to get to that person that really is a good fit. That's been my kind of experience. I mean, some people probably do better than that with their hiring practices, but that's kind of the one. Same thing with your new business, man, coming in with the people who can scale, who's going to care about the business, who's going to, and building a team fast enough to take care of the lead flow that you might be able to bid. So there's kind of like that double-edged sword there. But
right. And add to that, that this is not your full-time gig. So while in theory, if you said, you know what, I'm doing nothing else, but I'm going to monetize those deck leads, you'd probably take, it wouldn't be 5 million, it'd probably be 8 million that you'd squeeze out of them and you'd run it really effing well.
Right.
Now, I don't know what margins are and I'm sure they're fine, but you're like, well, but you're running, you know, this entire media empire at this point and you got these things and it's sometimes hard. I run, I have another podcast called Max Growth Live and my co-host is famous for that. We have a concept that we take when we get these ideas and we have to put them, you know, off to the side. They have to go into quarantine for a certain period of time. He needs longer than I do. It could be anywhere from 3 days to 6 weeks.
I'd love to take a look at your GoDaddy account. Probably looks like mine and all the websites that you're
right.
One of the build domains you bought for. Yeah,
exactly. I've gotten better. I've actually finally, after all these years, I've let all those domains go. Meaning if I ever wanted them, you could just buy them back. They weren't like magical. They were just sure. Meaning they were the best of what was available. But as we know, it's not the domain with rare exceptions that's going to make it. You can always find a domain that will make you money. You know, that with your geos and your deck, you know, there'll be something that is fine.
Thank goodness, right? Because back in the day, it made a big difference. But yes, now.
Well, no. But I'm saying even back in the day, some of it was in our head. Meaning right. You could add the word the before it. You could get a dot. There was your it's in your head that you had to have that perfect domain.
Sure.
And you could always flip into something later if you had. But my point is it is definitely something that I've seen as an entrepreneur that like you start to see stuff and you start to like, as you walk through the world, one of my favorite baseball players, late baseball players, his child is a Bard. I'm literally in a fan group and I see this thing and it's a disaster. And I'm like, I know that with an hour of my time, I could get this poor kid, adult in much, much better shape. And you start to see stuff differently. Almost like a beautiful mind. You're like, I could do this, I could do that. But you also have to be careful because if you go off in too many directions, you can go crazy. And maybe you're not gonna go crazy, but like you'll start to lose it. And then you look to the deck place and you're like, well, I'm getting $5 million worth of leads a year, but like I'm taking nominal money out because I have to, they're sloppy because my thumb's not on it. If you were in that deck place every day, they'd be crushing it. But like, sure. as it's sort of like another one of your businesses. And again, when you see, I'll flip it back to this. You see, like even from like a Shark Tank, you know, they're now at the point X number of seasons in where they have a whole pyramid of people to be able to put their finger on each of these businesses. Cause there's no way any one person could touch all that in a meaningful way.
Right.
And I feel like for yourself, have you scaled sort of an ops team so that it's not just your labor, but that there's somebody that's not you that makes sure that these things, not just obviously running the deck place, which is a given, but like how have you scaled the investment?
That's a great question. And the way I've done it, which I think some people might look at this as kind of strange, but for instance, on the couple of franchises that I bought them 100%. They were already existing. One was in Kansas City, one was in St. Louis. I actually gave week one, 49% of the business away to a guy that I had experience running.
An operating partner.
Why the heck would you do that? Because he's been doing it. He knew how to do it. He was the GM. I didn't want to touch it. I wanted to bring my clients to it. And now he runs the 7 or 8 people that run that. I have no day-to-day whatsoever.
No, right, right. And he owns it. So look, you operating, some people do it 25%, some do a third, some do 49. But like you're essentially that, because with that, you know that it will be run and run well. And without it,
sure.
It probably would end up being, you know, roadkill. Hopefully you would still be fine, but you know, you only have so many hours in the day. And then if somebody else is waking up in the morning, thinking about it, going to sleep and thinking about it and can check in with you on a periodic basis to get your genius into
totally.
It. Great. But that's it.
And you bring it. It's exactly what you said. In this case, where somebody's like completely running the entire business and has for 10 years, that's different than bringing somebody in as a GM that's running part of it or some of it. You know, maybe that's a 10 or a 20. So you're right. It's the perspective runs. But some of these other things, like the deck business, for example, totally another guy is taking complete operational piece. He already runs another home services business. So, you know, in that case, it's a little bit different.
No, but you also not, you won't theoretically with 49, with a percentage of the business out, you're not going to get that phone call saying, hey, my GM just got a better job. That's where I'm now sitting over the deck place selling decks.
And well, and all my businesses, nobody takes a penny out unless we take a dollar for dollar. So there's no salary. There's, you know what I'm talking about? So we all, in this other situation, there was a GM salary and all this kind of stuff. No, here's the deal. That's how I work it. I work it, and it seems to work out really well because we're all focusing. Profit stays in the business. We share it at the end. We make decisions to grow it. That's well, how it's working for me.
Well, and not right, but I have to read into this. This is not your partner's only venture, which means you now have the issue. Your issue is now his issue, which is how is that allocated there? And this is the squeaky wheel is always my issue, which is right. People go to where the money is, and if the money is not there, then they won't follow it. Right. You know, meaning if it turns out, so that all works well, as long as you get to critical mass where there's enough money to be interesting to him. Well, whereas if it's going to be 4 years before there's profit, I'm making that up because you're investing right. into the business, then that doesn't work because, you know, unless this guy sees that same 4 year horizon, but then it goes back to SEO. People do until they're 9 months in and say, where the hell are my leads? And this may be right. a guy like, yeah, that's all great, but it's 9 months in, I need to pay a mortgage. You obviously right. have to know your talent that you're getting, but it's not a panacea. If you're in each situation, you obviously know your numbers, you knew what you were getting. Right. And it may be that you invested in the franchise by buying it that came with that ready, steady cash flow. That's what you're buying.
Right.
But if you don't have that, and you can do that by investing in something where you're actually, you didn't just say here's a franchise, I'm starting it flat footed. You're buying an existing one where you had pro formas, you knew what you were getting. So you would say, hey, this is what's going to be split. So he knows essentially what his quote unquote salary is. And this is what we can invest back into the business. And you're not going to get as much of a push for a higher salary because he knows that if you ever sell this thing, when you sell it, that he'll be, you know, getting the upside from that.
Well, the goal for that one, honestly, is to bring somebody in that would be kind of a GM and self run. So you come in and just give me another. So it's really interesting how you do these things. But you set, obviously, I think the end of the day is we set them up basically how for each case is different. Each case is different, basically.
In these franchises, it sounds like you were driven to them because of the SEO side. But at the end of the day, they drove you to things that were not SEO.
Oh, I didn't really care if the franchise business, it's a media company. It's essentially a magazine that goes out to 120,000 homes here in Kansas City and St. Louis. I didn't care if that one was totally break even. That makes really good money. You know, it's not making us millions, but it's making us hundreds of thousands. That's gravy to me. What I really wanted was the lead generation that's going to feed the businesses that I'm acquiring right now. That's really good because that's the bigger
upside. So basically you're getting free, you're getting the front page of the magazine for your guys and you pay for it with everything else.
The rest of the community that's making it and creating its own profit center is
right. If you already have the decks, you get the HVAC guy and the air vent guy is paying to be in this magazine.
Sure. And each one of these magazines, we usually have three or we try and keep it tight, but there's not just one person, but there's not five either. It's usually like three or four. So it's a great thing that gets out there. It's another lead generating piece, but that was a strategic investment for me. Where I was like, hey, you know, I can do this. Yes. It's a couple $2.5 million business. The margins aren't nearly as high. If we work on it, we can get it up, which we did. It's still not a great business, which I would quit everything, but it's a great business in terms of what it can do for the other businesses that I own. And well, this gets back into right. like
and somebody locally, have you used that as lead gen for the digital where those people may need a PPC campaign, they may need an SEO campaign. That's the guy locally I know has done that. And it's not high-end SEO. Like you're kidding yourself if you think you're selling $3,500 websites to each of the guys. Right. The reason they're in that magazine is it's a finite amount of money. They get their money back, you know, with some ROI. But have you been able to cross-sell those into digital at all, those potential clients?
Yes, both ways. More so going from our agency into it, but really? In some cases the other way. Yeah, because what I'm seeing is I was a digital snob basically. But then I saw the numbers and the calls coming in and I was like, wow. And then over the years, what I've really started to see is the more holistic it is, you do some outbound stuff that creates some demand comes back to the internet and you start plugging these things in and there's 10x instead of 2 or 3x. That's what's really helping to me locally is you plug in the PPC, the SEO, some form of demand creation with whether it's radio, TV. In my case, it's this magazine that goes into high-end homes every month. It kind of makes, it creates some sales that aren't already there because people are like, oh, our deck is, you know, ugly. We should do something. They weren't searching for it right then. It created one. Somebody's got to do some demand creation. But what I've noticed is for the people that we have here in the Midwest is when we have kind of a full thing that includes some demand creation, it really starts to skyrocket things. In fact, like I think I've mentioned before, we've had two outdoor remodeling clients here that have done phenomenally well that have got to the attention of these large vendors that are now bringing us into other cities. And the reason why that happened is because they've seen, well, what, this is really explosive growth in terms of lead generations. How are you doing it? They both pointed us to here in Kansas City. And I showed them, this is what's working. We do this with the home ag in Kansas City. We do this with PPC. We do this with, I call it like award marketing. You know, we've got our own kind of version of a home advisor and that kind of stuff, which really,
it sounds like you've done that across. That's how we originally met, right?
Right.
You know, people love awards. US News is the geniuses, right?
Just award marketing or whatever you want to call it, but the top 10 list dominate. Doesn't matter if it's legal or whatever it is. They're all taking up half the page or more, you know, for local search results. But when you have your own, so that's why I say here in Kansas City, I've got my own platform for that. I got my own platform for the media. Now I've got my own, you know, knowledge and stuff with PPC and SEO and that kind of stuff. So when you have that, magic really can happen, but yeah, it does work. I think I was a digital snob on that piece. And I think when you get in front of people, in front of something that's quality, especially now with COVID and stuff, people are opening up their mail. It really does work. And you call rail stuff or whatever you're using, you can see the phones coming in. It pays for itself. So I've gone the other way now. I'm just like, it's not really to me about SEO or PPC or anything. All it boils down to right now is lead generation. That's all.
Understood.
Really,
but okay, let me ask you, this is what happens in the legal space, right? There are guys in the mass tort space that are like the highest end, the PI, the highest end of the single event, and you're criminal and family and all this stuff. But one of the things that frustrates me as an agency owner, and I'm curious to see in the home services space is, okay, you make the phone ring. That's really freaking hard. You get it to ring, but they don't end up monetizing. They're not squeezing the juice out of the orange. And so do you end up like, and this is something I've seen, particularly in the mass tort space, some of my friends in that space, they went from getting leads, but saying, screw it, these guys aren't answering the phone. So we're going to have to answer the calls. Right. So now you're selling them, you know, actual viable. Now are you booking appointments? Now you're booking the appointment. Well, fuck it. I might as well have the guy building the deck. And you start end up getting to the point where you're just like, at each of these stages. Now, thankfully, what we try to do, at least on the legal side, is these guys have some ability and you really just try to coach, bring them answering vendors,
yes,
everything you can, because if they don't, you know, how often have you had a client come to you and say, hey, I'm not getting ROI, and you listen to the call rails and you listen to the call rails and you're like, what the
fuck?
Didn't
answer the phone. You were rude.
It's just like, and so it's got to be, again, bringing you back to the idea that you've now seen it from both sides. You know, there's a
well, this is what you had that I didn't have. I have now. I'm looking at the full customer journey as an owner. You were already there years ago. This is what's really opened my eyes up and been like, wow. I mean, so much is focused on the phone right now. I can't believe that we take all this here and look at the call rail and listen to it. And I'm just like sweating.
And that's most of it. Look, my intake team, which has been through ups and downs, I run a 14-person team. We're dabbling with a little bit from overseas at the law firm. So it's mostly domestic, but I'm trying to layer some people, especially for the bilingual. Like, why am I paying like US prices for a bilingual answering person? But one of the things I may have mentioned to you is like, so a friend of mine, he's a jack of all trades, an interesting character. He has his own sort of home improvement group, does a lot with like higher end condo associations. And he's like, dude, there's so much money in roofing. He lives in the suburbs and his mom needed a roof. And some guy comes, knocks on the door. And it's like, I don't know, $18,000 for a roof that, you know, was about $3,000-$4,000 worth of goods. And he's like, you know, he knows that they would have gone down to 10 if she negotiated, but like people just take it at that $15,000-$18,000 number. And then I'm like, well, look, you and I, we can make the phone ring for roofs. It's not rocket science. A couple, you know, good, well-optimized site and some Google reviews, you know, next thing you know, you'd be in business. But you also know that this only goes as well as the phone being answered. Mm. And if you do all that stuff, how are you getting paid? He's never going to pay me what I need per month. So now I'm back to you. Am I going to be the 50-50 partner with some guy or a one-third partner with some guy who is there? And yes, he'll be motivated unless he's not, but they're not, you know, these are lifestyle people very often where once they're making their X amount, they're happy. They're not, you know, looking at how, so anyway.
Comes to people, I mean, totally.
Right. And that's, you know, the part of the reason I like legal is that it gets me away from some of the riffraff. And I say riffraff in the sense of the widget that may or may not be monetizable. But as we see in home services, one of the areas I'd love to break into at some point, there's tons of opportunity. But the question is, it's almost like choosing your partner the other way. You want viable people because there's no shortage of HVAC or electricians or roofers or deckers. There's plenty of that. But the question is, can you find somebody where it will be a symbiotic relationship because the numbers they're willing to pay on the upfront. So you almost wish that you could, you know, shark tank it in reverse saying, hey, this is a 32-year-old guy with a family. He knows how to scale a business, good business head on his shoulders. I want to be able to, you know, I'll take a piece of it because he's never going to pay me the $3,000 it's going to take to truly SEO this. Yes. But if we SEO this and put some reviews and own, you know, the Washington DC roofing, like there's no,
this is why I love SEO and people worry about saturated. I want the most competitive stuff. I want the saturated. If you're good at what you do, you're going to get up there. There is a reason why it's competitive.
Correct. It cuts both ways though. They're like, I always want to sort of like money ball it because there are places where it takes real resources. You can't snap your fingers and come into a saturated market as we see in legal. So again, there's FU money in it. Absolutely. If you're in the highest end suburb, what's the place with the promenade by you guys? Oberlin Park.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you, I mean, like, you know, I'm sure there's a number of home improvement people there where, you know, you can get premium pricing and it's a beautiful thing. At the same time, you may be able to go to the suburb where the prices are a little bit more sensitive, but you can walk in and own the joint. And then do three more. And that's always a back and forth between, do you own one? Do you dominate this? Or you sort of, do you put yourself out there in order to take advantage of the fact that there's a much less perfect market once you move away from some of the money hubs? Well,
one of the things on that point is I will say is this is again, the other side of the table. I still think almost all of our clients, I think this, you probably see some of this as well. Most people look at marketing in terms of what they need to spend or how little they can spend or they want to do it. When I'm buying companies right now, I'm looking at how much I can spend. I want to go in there and dominate. I want to get a footprint. I want to get the thing going. I want to see, because I know I'll turn it into, yeah, I'll turn $100,000 into $1 million for sure, maybe $1.5 million. And I'm just looking at where I can spend, where I can put stuff. And it makes me excited about investing in the marketing that way.
Are you buying actual businesses in these places once you know it, or are you starting them up from scratch?
I'm looking for what I think is what I'm really, really looking for is because there's a ton of them, is the baby boomer businesses that have the guys in their 50s or 60s, maybe even 70s or whatever it is, that have a $1 or $2 million business that don't spend anything on marketing and they just have a nice consistent flow and a good team, and then turn them into a marketing, I call marketing agency mentality, because those are the guys that are killing it, right?
No, look, it's no different than the legal space. You have these guys who have these beautiful referral practices, they make good, and this is the issue. And I'll tell you from legal, you tell me if it's true in the home services.
Okay.
The issue that I see in legal is that I have a heart-to-heart with some of these guys because I know I can do it, but unless they change their mentality, it won't work. And I'll give you the example. So if you're going to own the business, fine, if you're buying it, but if you're just saying, hey, I'm going to help turn this, well, not so fast. So my dad's still practicing law. He's like 85. He still loves it.
That's awesome.
Does it every day. And he has a practice in New York and I affiliates with my firm for some work, but I sent him a criminal case on Friday afternoon. The guy works down the hall from him, does criminal. I was like, Dad, you know, here's a free lead. Hopefully they make some money. So he calls me back to Friday at 4, calls back Monday at 10 a.m. It's like, yeah, somebody else got to them first. I'm like, of course they did, unless that changes. So what I would say is you can do that. But if the business itself thinks, hey, this is the same, I'm just adding marketing, it's not. When you're a referral place and somebody calls you for a deck saying, hey, they love the job they did for my friend, they'll wait 5 days for you to call back. Sure. But if somebody's calling from your coupons or for, you know, from your magazine or from a even worse, from a digital, you know, something that they've clicked on, you know, it's an ephemeral lead. And that if the business doesn't morph, A, from the answering point of view, B, from the customer service point of view, C, from the ability to just give immediate gratification. I look at our lawyers as we're plumbers. And if the hot water heater in the basement explodes and you need it fixed, that's the relationship that we have there. And if you pause or don't pick up the phone or don't take care of them, they're on to the next.
Yeah.
And so to me, I'm curious, have you, when you've done this, have you, you know, it's not just buying a business because you need to be able, I guess, if you're taking out the ownership, that's great. But if the ownership stays, that's not an easy transition.
No. Well, they stay for a little while in terms of being able to just transfer some stuff over.
Or they're doing you want the relationships. You don't lose the other piece. You don't want to throw away. God bless the relationships. There's nothing better than that. But if you're trying to layer stuff on, it's a different, it's almost like a separate business.
Yeah, legal might be a little different in that case. I mean, because I'm looking at home services, you know, a lot of times the owners, you buy them out and they leave, then the techs or whatever in there, the people that are actually doing the work, you know, you can theoretically come in there and make somebody who's been doing stuff in files and paper and put them on a CRM or a job, you know, management system.
And some will make it, some won't.
Right. Right. So yeah, it's really, it's not something you just go, oh, that's a great pick. I'll kick that one up and put that one up. But no, but there is, and a lot of the businesses that are $1 million, $2 million, it's the business walks away with the father and the son. So you can't buy, I mean, that's the biggest thing is there somebody in there? You got to bring somebody in to run it because I couldn't buy a company that doesn't have, I can't do the day-to-day for any of the business up my own.
Right. My guess is I would love to see, and I see this in the legal space, if the son really wants it, you could sometimes get away with it. I don't know if that you could thread the needle, whereas the dad is taking it, the son wants the innovation, and then you're there. But it's tough because, you know, in that world, you know, what a non-compete, now you're suing somebody because they open up across the world. Have you had anybody ever open up with a similar business after you bought them?
No. The other part of this too, I think, is I had a post on this recently that kind of is there's the existing businesses that come with hairs. I still think they're kind of interesting because there's all sorts of reasons why you can kind of start, you know, with a team to execute stuff, especially in home services. That's, you got to have somebody that's going to go out there. If you're going to get a bunch of deck leads, somebody has to build the decks and do them right. Right. But one of the other ones I'm really excited about is I think this is a great time for the millennials or whoever to come out. And literally I'm doing this right now for a guy who's worked 15 years for a big national company. He's an expert in the space. He is literally, I mean, we just put a temp site. He's going to come into this market in Kansas City, right? And he's going to build a multi-million dollar business this year because he has the production and he has the ability to sell and close. And I'm going to send him leads and, you know, basically day one. I think there's a huge opportunity for people to come in that can leverage and scale and find people to do the work and stuff. But again, they're unicorns, and then enable them to build business and essentially steal market. It's really just kind of almost like an opportunism, you know, arbitrage where you can just steal market share. I think there's a huge, huge opportunity for that, but you have to have the production in place.
Right.
Some of these guys have a lot of the home services, they are subcontracting out a lot. So if you can get a good subcontractor in the space, some of these young guys can leave, hang up a shingle, find a powerful marketing firm that has, you know, the ability to generate leads for them, either as, you know, this is where it kind of comes in. It's really interesting. In this case, the guy has his own funding, so there's no problem. There is no equity type of thing. But I do think there's a big opportunity for kind of millennials or whatever the the generation is coming up behind them to take market share away. Cause most of these guys are not paperless. They're not marketing. They don't have the agency mentality, and you can do it. I'm doing it right here. I mean, we literally are taking $5 million out of the deck market and putting it in a brand new company just because we know how to market and we've got the team to do it. That could be done with anything. I think roofing, any home services, any businesses in general, if you can do it and execute, cause getting getting the leads is one thing. If you can't execute, the whole thing falls apart. And I got a whole story about the deck thing that did fall apart the first time till we got the right crew in place. And now it's thriving, you know?
That's awesome. Well, this is awesome. I'm so glad we got to spend some time together.
Totally. Let me wrap it up on my end with just asking you where can people follow you? What do you got going on?
Sure. I am, I'm pretty easy to find, Seth at Blue Shark Digital, BLU Shark Digital, no E. And Phil, how about for my fan base? Where do they find you?
KC Web Designer is kind of my home base, you know, for the digital stuff. SEO for Growth is a company that I started with John Jantz, where we do some of the podcast booking stuff and some other things related to SEO nationally. And then, yeah, if you want to check out maybe Heartland Dex as an example, or the Home Mag, in Kansas City and St. Louis, those are two places where you kind of see some of the other things, business ventures that we got, and kind of follow and see how those go along.
Awesome. Well, this is great, and can't wait to connect in person.
Thank you for tuning in to the SEO Insider with Seth Price. Be sure to check back next week for fresh insights into building your brand's online presence. Episodes are available to stream directly on Blue Shark Digital's website.